Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. Thanks for downloading and listening to this show. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of July 1st. Microsoft releases Vista SP1 and Hyper-V. Microsoft pushes advisory to handle SQL injection attacks. And Australian schools opt for Gmail instead of Outlook. Also, a study claims that companies are replacing rather than hiring for new IT positions. We'll head to the first news bits from Redmond right after this quick musical interlude. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and once again, I'd like to thank everyone who downloads or streams this show, and especially those who share it with others. And be sure to listen to the end of the podcast to find out how to enter my weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. Let's move quickly to news that made headlines last week at redmondmag.com. The results of an online test conducted by UK antivirus firm Sophos found that more often than not, PC users don't install Microsoft's monthly patches. The results, which were released last Monday, were gathered from 40 days' worth of data from a sample group of 580 PCs in corporate environments, 80% of which failed one or more basic security tests. Moreover, 63% were found lacking at least one Microsoft patch on the OS level, the Office and application levels, or the browser and media player component levels. But according to Randy Abrams, Director of Technical Education for IT Consultancy, ESET, these reports can sometimes be like two blind men touching different parts of an elephant. He said they seem to get the same results, but it doesn't cover the whole body. There are several reasons for IT pros and individual users to delay or skip patches, one being the fact that not every patch may apply to them. Many enterprises also hold off patching to evaluate the cost or to avoid either repatching or seeing their particular tailored systems block the patches. There's also some lingering resistance to automatic updates for Microsoft patches, said ESET's Abrams. In related news, Microsoft last Tuesday issued a new security advisory after the discovery of a recent escalation in a class of attacks targeting websites. The exploits are associated with Microsoft's Active Server Pages and the ASP.NET 2.0 framework, with SQL Server used as an entry vector for so-called SQL injection attacks. ASP lets developers create dynamic web pages supporting interactive browser-based applications and e-commerce by connecting with a relational database such as SQL Server on the back end. Even though Microsoft's technologies are used in the attacks, the fault lies with website developers that haven't followed the best practices for security, according to Redmond. Microsoft's advisory describes three tools that can help protect individual websites from those SQL injection attacks. 3 months after the initial release of Windows Vista Service Pack 1, Microsoft has issued what it calls a reliability update to sweep out any glitches that may pop up in a complex stack of applications on the new OS version. Per a Knowledge Base article posted late Tuesday night, the update is ready now on the software giant's download servers, and it will roll out automatically in July's patch cycle through Windows Update. Microsoft published the update because issues have been reported by customers who use the error reporting service or Microsoft customer support services, according to Redmond. Microsoft routinely releases such updates, but this one is significant because it's the first involving Vista SP1. Among the applications that this update will help run more efficiently is Windows Media Player and the Excel spreadsheet program. Windows Media Player fix will help prevent the stuttering of audio and video files when streaming content. In Excel's case, the update corrects an error message that some users have been complaining about. After workstations that have been in operation for a while or even idle, some users who tried to resume working in Excel 2007 received an error message saying Excel.exe is not a valid Win32 application. Microsoft was really serious about Monday, June 30th being the end date for selling Windows XP licenses with new computers. So serious that Senior Vice President Bill Veit wrote a letter clarifying some of the details. Windows XP's life has been extended once before, but this time the bells have rung on the venerable operating system, with a few exceptions. And Veit's letter pointed to the future beyond the current Windows Vista operating system. He gave an estimated arrival time for Windows 7, the code name for Microsoft's still-developing operating system. He said to expect Windows 7 to arrive sometime around January 2010. Addressing the Microsoft partner community, Veit confirmed that Windows 7 will not be a new kernel, but will be built on Windows Vista. Partners can expect less of a surprise in terms of integration and migration efforts than was the case with Vista. Microsoft plans to continue to provide security updates for Windows XP Service Pack 3 until April of 2014. So current users of Windows XP can expect almost 6 more years of patch support. In terms of buying Windows XP directly instead of Windows Vista, Microsoft plans to license Vista Home Edition and XP Starter to low-cost computer makers. XP won't be available for new state-of-the-art PCs after June 30th, but there is potentially an extension to that deadline if the PCs come from a system builder. Microsoft has released OpenXML File Format Converter for Mac 1.0, a file translator that allows users to open, edit, and convert OpenXML files created in Office 2008 for Mac or Office 2007 for Windows for use in earlier versions of the suite, including Office 2004 11.4 and Office X10.1.9 or newer. In addition to text documents, the converter also supports Excel workbooks and PowerPoint presentations saved in OpenXML format. In Office 2004 11.4, the converter runs in the background. Otherwise, it operates as a standalone application. It can also be used to batch convert multiple OpenXML documents. Google seems to have bested Microsoft in the land down under, according to various accounts of an Australian public school system email contract deal. The deal, announced early last week, ousts an email system based on Microsoft's products in favor of using Google's Gmail. The school system, which includes New South Wales public schools and technical and further education colleges, plans to provide a new email system using Gmail to 1.3 million users by the end of 2008, according to a press release issued by John Hatzigeros, the acting New South Wales Minister for Education and Training. The contract is estimated to be worth $9.1 million over its 3-year term. Negotiations are currently underway with the winning bidder, SMS Management and Technology. The school system apparently has been using Microsoft's Outlook and Exchange solutions, which had been installed by Unisys under a 3-year deal initially valued at $33 million. That system was constructed in 2003, and the contract was extended 3 more years. However, students only began using the email system in 2007, according to MISAustralia.com. And in our final news item, Microsoft's first major push into the virtualization space officially kicked off last week as Hyper-V had been released to manufacturing. Hyper-V is now available for download from the Microsoft Download Center, according to Arun Jayendran, a senior product manager for Windows Server Marketing. Hyper-V will be available through Windows Upgrade on July 8th. Hyper-V is a bare metal hypervisor, meaning it sits directly on hardware and controls the creation and operation of virtual machines. It's intended to compete directly with ESX, the flagship hypervisor of industry leader VMware. Microsoft hopes to make inroads in the market by offering Hyper-V as part of Windows 2008. No additional licenses are needed. ESX, conversely, carries a hefty price tag. Microsoft's other hypervisor, Virtual Server 2005, is a Type 2 or hosted hypervisor. It sits on top of an operating system, creating additional overhead and making it a poor choice in most cases for enterprise environments. Microsoft also has a PC virtualization product, Virtual PC, which allows users to run other Microsoft OSs within an OS like Windows XP or Windows Vista. Microsoft will also offer a standalone version of Hyper-V, independent of Windows 2008, called Hyper-V Server, which will retail for $28, with availability in late 2008. The other key piece of Microsoft's virtualization strategy, System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2008, is slated for release in the early fourth quarter of this year. Up next, we'll have news from the far reaches of IT. Do remember to listen to the very end of this podcast to find out how to enter the t-shirt giveaway. You're listening to Redmond Radio.
Eu vou pra Oslo, pra sair no Oslo Dum. Asfo da terra do bacalhau, que todo ano cai a neve ou faça sol. Vai pra avenida no dia de carnaval. Eu vou pra Oslo, pra sair no Oslo do.
Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. Welcome back from the break. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please do pass this show around to your colleagues. Before we finish up with the rest of the podcast news, here's an update regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. In Redmond Magazine in July, a look at Microsoft's chief software architect, Ray Ozzie. And in Redmond Channel Partner this month, a preview of the Worldwide Partner Conference taking place in Houston next week. Now, just a reminder to listen all the way to the end of the podcast for details on how to enter our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. Disturbing news on the security front. The annual Trust, Security, and Password Survey conducted by Newton, Massachusetts-based IT consultancy CyberArk Software found that as many as a third of IT administrators said they still have access to the enterprise environment after leaving the job. Moreover, many also came clean about routinely abusing their admin privileges by accessing company systems and snooping through confidential files, databases, and documents. The results were gleaned from a survey of about 300 mostly senior IT professionals attending the recent Info Security Conference in London. Among the confidential bits of information IT pros admitted to looking at were salary details, merger and acquisition or executive share sale plans, and initiatives, personal emails, board meeting minutes and correspondence, and other pieces of personal information. What's more, nearly half of the respondents, about 47%, said that at the very least they have at times accessed information not relevant to what they're supposed to be doing. A group of developers have signed a statement condemning binary-only Linux modules, which it argues can wreak havoc on Linux deployments, particularly because without the source code available, their negative influence can be hard to trace. The developers' collective decreed any closed-source Linux kernel module or driver to be harmful and undesirable. Quote, "We have repeatedly found them to be detrimental to Linux users, businesses, and the greater Linux ecosystem." The statement also urged Linux users to support only vendors that offer open-source drivers. At last count, 141 Linux kernel developers had added their names to this list, including such top contributors as David Woodhouse, Theodore So, Andrew Morton, Greg Crow Hartman, and Alan Cox. Linux creator Linus Torvalds has not signed the petition. A module is a chunk of code that can be loaded into an operating system kernel to execute a particular function. Hardware drivers are considered modules. An open source module is one in which the source code for the software is made publicly available. The statement asserts that although most Linux modules are now open source, a few are still offered only in their compiled form, called a binary format. No one seems to know whether we're in the midst of a minor economic bump in the road, an economic downturn, or an all-out recession. However, if IT salaries are any indication, employers seem to be hedging their bets. According to salary researcher Janko Associates, IT compensation growth is more or less flat, while IT hiring is primarily limited to plugging gaps, for example, hiring replacements. Moreover, shops are also cutting back on, or in some cases eliminating, discretionary spending. Janko collects its salary survey data every 6 months, and 6 months ago, its look at the impulse of IT salaries and compensation showed that things didn't appear so dire. After the first quarter, however, companies cut back dramatically on IT spending, according to Janko officials. Elsewhere, Janko found plenty to cause alarm. Consider hiring demand, which is a good indicator of IT growth. Today, we're seeing IT stagnation. According to the Janko survey, companies are now hiring fewer new employees than at any time since 2004. Many shops have all but stopped hiring, with the exception of filling replacement positions, while those that are bringing on new employees are doing so at lower salary levels. A coalition of academics, information technology industry leaders, and public policy advocates last week launched a campaign to make access to a fast, open, and affordable internet a basic right for all Americans. Federal Communications Commissioner Jonathan Edelstein was among the scheduled speakers in New York last Tuesday at the Personal Democracy Forum to announce the creation of InternetForEveryone.org. Other participants in the news conference included Google Chief Technology Evangelist and Internet Patriarch Vint Cerf, in addition to law professors and entrepreneurs. The coalition warned that the U.S. is falling behind in broadband Internet access at a time when high-speed online access is becoming a public necessity. The group pointed to statistics showing that since 2001, the U.S. has slipped from fourth in the world in broadband penetration to 15th today. In addition, U.S. consumers have less choice when it comes to high-speed online access and are paying more for it. InternetForEveryone.org will promote four basic principles. Every home and business in the U.S. must have access to a high-speed, world-class communications infrastructure. Every consumer must have the benefit of competition in online content and among high-speed internet providers to achieve lower prices and higher speeds. Every internet user should have freedom of speech and commerce online in an open market without gatekeepers or discrimination. And the internet should continue to create good jobs, foster entrepreneurship, spread new ideas, and serve as a leading engine of economic growth. The organization intends to solicit federal, state, and local support for the initiative. If enterprise IT organizations are going to meaningfully reduce their carbon footprints, they're going to do so first by tackling low-hanging fruit. For example, power-hungry servers, storage, and networking gear. Cisco Systems has already made much of its green bona fides, at least with respect to its IronPort appliance product line. Last week, Cisco took an even more ambitious step, pledging to reduce its carbon footprint by 25% over the next 4 years. In many cases, Cisco plans to rely on its own technology, RX, to execute on its ambitious greenhouse gas reduction schedule. Not that the networking giant won't also take concrete steps to eliminate some of the most glaring sources of GHG emissions. For example, officials pointed out, Cisco's labs and data centers, which contribute significantly to its overall GHG emissions, will eventually make use of several energy-saving measures, starting first with a switch to a more efficient lab or testing equipment. The company also plans to invest in smart power distribution units, which can actually power down machines when they aren't in use. It will also make aggressive use of virtual network storage and, of course, greenify its mechanical and electrical systems. Elsewhere, Cisco plans to increase its use of collaborative technologies such as its Cisco Telepresence and Cisco WebEx to help reduce business travel, which officials say accounts for more than a quarter of its overall GHG footprint. Finally, in our last item, requirements for professional security certification for IT workers in civilian agencies now being readied by the Office of Management and Budget would have a major impact on how government and industry recruit, train, and manage their IT staffs, according to a security expert last Wednesday. George Datesman, a senior manager at Noblis, which is a nonprofit high-tech consultancy, said at a Digital Government Institute conference on cybersecurity that the OMB is finalizing minimum requirements for professional certification. He had no time frame for their release. As IT security has become professionalized, a number of certifications have achieved general recognition industry-wide, including a suite from the International Information Systems Security Certification Consortium, which is recognized for its Certified Information Systems Security Professional title, among others. Organizations awarding certifications would have to be accredited to meet a federal mandate. Datesman likened the situation to the law enforcement field, which still is sorting out how to fully implement requirements for increased professional training and education 30 years after the movement began. Not only would there be new hiring requirements, there also could be increased responsibility and legal liability for workers and their employers. Industry experts believe the requirement also is likely to drive up the cost of recruiting professionals, not only in government but among government contractors, who also would have to meet the requirements in staffing government contracts. And believe it or not, that's it for this week's episode of Redmond Radio. As usual, before we end the podcast, I'd like to once again remind faithful Redmond Radio listeners that you can win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly t-shirt giveaway. It's real easy to enter. Just send me an email with a new t-shirt giveaway phrase, "I want a t-shirt," on the subject line of your message, to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105-M-E-D-I-A. And note that the phrase is, "I want a t-shirt," not Redmond t-shirt, as it has been in the past. Entries not sporting the new phrase will be ignored. This week's winner is Chris C. Thanks for listening, and good luck to everyone else next week. And that's it for this episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to thank all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass this show on to their colleagues. See you here next week.